Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy Election Day for those of you headed to the polls today. Big days at the polls for folks in New Jersey and Virginia. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And our good martini today is just kind of our recounting of our own trips to the polls. Both Jim and I have already voted today. Jim, I know in Yuppie Acres, a big turnout's probably not a good thing, so hopefully it was pretty limited there.
It was, Greg. My neighborhood usually goes about two-thirds for the Democrats, one-third for the Republicans. And no waits today. Just stroll right in. A couple other people there. Pretty low turnout considering it's a gubernatorial election, and this was probably around 8:39. So you're going to guess, you know, kind of that prime pre-work period. No, there really isn't much of a line there. My guess is turnout will be pretty darn low. This is for a whole bunch of different reasons. Always you get that big, you know, slope after a presidential year. But I'll also note that, like, you know, look, there are a bunch of Republicans who aren't thrilled with Cuccinelli. I think that any Democrat, you put enough bourbon in them, they'll admit that, you know, McAuliffe is a crony capitalist crook who ordinarily they denounce as if he were a Republican. And we'll talk about Sarvis in the second martini. But, you know, not great options. And as a result of that, I think a lot of people aren't going to be all that inspired and just, you know, inclined to stay home today, which may turn out to be a, you know, may help Cuccinelli a little bit.
My experience in Virginia was pretty much the same as yours in terms of heading to the polling place. There was literally no line at the table. I handed them the ID. There was only one other person using one of the voting booths in there. I changed my tactics outside, however. You know, my usual idea is to gather as much Democratic flyers as possible so they'll run out before the end of the day. But I got disheartened in 2012 when the guy gave me his whole stack, and I'm thinking, yes. And he's like, I got a whole car full of this stuff. And I'm like, oh. So perhaps if I'd done that today, it might have been a little more effective since they were expecting a low voter turnout. But anyway, my strategy today was to walk up, and there was just the one person there from the Democrats, one person there from the Republicans with their sample ballot. So they tell you who they want you to vote for in each of the four races that we were dealing with. And so I asked the Democratic lady first, and I said, in one phrase or sentence, how would you sum up why I should vote Democratic? And she thought for a second and said, well, what issues matter to you? I'm like, well, what I really want to know is why you're excited. Why do Democrats think this is a great ticket? And she thought for a second and she
That's
goes.
That's a very polite way of asking, what's wrong with you?
And she says, we're the party of nice.
Have you turned on a television in the past 6 months? The entire McAuliffe campaign is based on saying that Cuccinelli is the worst guy ever. And you know, there's all these slow-mo black and white images of him sneering.
So I go to the Republican guy and I say the same thing. In one sentence or phrase, can you explain why I should vote Republican? And he exceeded the one phrase, but he basically said, our candidates are men of integrity, our candidates are men of principle, and they will fight tooth and nail to stop Obamacare in this state. Wow, you actually know what you're doing. So there it is, specificity versus...
Mentions an issue, you know? It kind of implies a criticism of the other side, but doesn't really, you know, have to get negative on it, you know?
Exactly. So specificity and on message versus vagueness and nowhere close to the truth. So I thought
Nice, Greg. Nice.
Well, Jim and I had very smooth voting experiences this morning. Not the case, though, in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is about, what, two or three counties west of Washington, D.C. You've got Arlington, then Fairfax. I think Loudoun comes after that. It's usually tilts Republican, but it's a kind of a bellwether county in the state. But apparently a lot of the laptops and the whole network of voter ID checks across the county was down, so lines were gargantuan right out of the gate in Loudoun County, and this is a critical county. If Cuccinelli's going to do well, he's got to get a good turnout there. There were people calling into the local radio station here, WMAL, talking about their experiences. They arrived right at 6 o'clock when the polls opened. These people didn't even have printed voter rolls ready to go. Jim, just some glitches, though.
You know, what's kind of surprising, Greg, is that I've had nothing but good experiences since I moved to Virginia in 2007. And, you know, you mentioned earlier you show your ID. So they asked to see my driver's license and they verified to make sure that I knew where I lived and stuff like that. So this is generally a very well-run, smooth-running state. And, you know, this is a state that's always had a kind of a little chip on its shoulder about its, you know, traditions going back to Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. They like to think that they get these things right. And, you know, maybe this is the first impact of McAuliffe, Greg. We're becoming much more like those big northeastern states day by day. You know, our we can't count the votes. I guess you might argue it's a little more Floridian in its style, but nonetheless, it's disappointing to see. Hopefully they worked it out real quick. But also, the one quibble I might have with our state is our polls close at 7 o'clock, which is relatively early, particularly if you're trying to vote after work. And I remember a couple of years ago, they had an ice storm that hit on the day of the Virginia primary between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. So maybe the state needs to, you know, have a slightly later 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, something like that, for those after work crowd to get out and get a chance to cast their vote. And kind of bothersome that Loudoun would have a problem on this scale today.
Yeah, that, it is disturbing. I remember that day, too. I almost voted for Obama just to screw up Hillary because that was kind of the GOP fad at the time. But instead, I decided to vote for Mike Huckabee to screw up John McCain. And, well, that didn't work either. A lot of conservatives have been scratching their head about why would a libertarian be an active participant in a race involving Ken Cuccinelli, who embodies so many libertarian principles about smaller government, reducing the tax burden, and all these sorts of other things, strong Second Amendment supporter. Well, thanks to the Blaze, we might have some insights on this. Quote, a major Democratic Party benefactor and Obama campaign bundler helped pay for professional petition circulators responsible for getting Virginia Libertarian gubernatorial candidate Robert C. Sarvis on the ballot, a move that could split conservative votes in a tight race. And this guy's not just an Obama bundler. He's one of the top three dozen and was actually invited to a state dinner featuring British Prime Minister David Cameron. His bundling activity is on the same level as Anna Wintour of Vogue, a.k.a. The Devil Wears Prada, and Harvey Weinstein out in Hollywood. So the idea that this guy suddenly turned libertarian, something just does not smell right here, Jim.
Probably about a week ago, our Charlie Cook did a interview, did a good look at Sarvis's viewpoints, basically disputed the notion that this guy's libertarian. He had said, done an NBC interview in which he said he was hesitant to cut taxes, unsure as to how he might reduce spending, open to expanding Medicaid. And then the one that really got people crazy was he was open to the idea of a vehicle miles driven tax. In other words, the government puts something on your car, the GPS system measures how fast you drive, and that's how they calculate your car taxes. Is that what you think of when you think of libertarians, Greg?
Not at all.
Let's give the government a tracking device on your car so they can figure out how much you drive, and then they charge you with more taxes and stuff. This is not libertarianism. And so, you know, he called up Charlie Cook and he said, no, yes, I am. I just wasn't clear in that interview, blah, blah, blah. First of all, libertarianism basically has become kind of like hipsterism for liberals. You want all the benefits of the big government state. You just don't want to pay for it. So you can say you're anti-taxes. In the case of Sarvis, even he's not very big on tax cuts. Sarvis has basically turned into a walking none-of-the-above stance, and it's kind of frustrating for those of us who want to see smaller government, because whatever the intended result of the Sarvis campaign has been, the impact has been to benefit Terry McAuliffe. If you split the limited government factions, you end up helping the big government faction. And so the idea of Democrats getting behind Sarvis is not all that surprising. Sarvis can say, look, I'll take money from anybody. You know, just because they're trying to help me doesn't mean that I'm part of a scheme to split the vote and help the Democrats. But all of our worst suspicions about Sarvis appear to be growing increasingly accurate, that whether or not he was intended to split the righty vote, that certainly appears to be his impact today. And it's very possible that Terry McAuliffe will win today with less than 50% of the vote.
On to martini number three now, Jim. And people who followed the 2012 campaign, I don't think you had to follow it that closely. Remember three kind of sordid stories that were played on quite heavily. Number one was that Mitt Romney was hiding something by not releasing more of his tax returns. And Harry Reid eventually got to the point where he said his late father would be disappointed or embarrassed or humiliated or something with Mitt Romney's refusing to release those tax returns. Then there was attention to the fact that Mitch Daniels, then the governor of Indiana, who was thinking about running for president. There was attention to the fact that his wife had left him and they reconciled, and that would have been kind of a messy situation. And then, of course, there was the Herman Cain situation when it was his term to be the non-Romney, that all these allegations came out that he had had extramarital affairs and so forth. And a lot of people figured, well, this could be the Democrats worried about Cain. This could be Romney folks. He's got some people with sketchy reputations on his staff, as most campaigns do. But now it turns out, if the book Double Down by Halperin and Heilman is correct, that one campaign is responsible for all of those. And it was John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah. So he launched all of these rumors. He, I guess, thought Mitch Daniels would be a better candidate trying to fill the niche in the campaign that he was. And then, obviously, with Herman Cain rising there in the fall of of 2011 decided to launch those accusations against Herman Cain. So we were pretty disappointed and unimpressed with John Huntsman from the start. Knowing this, he's just despicable.
Really, you have to revise the assessment of him even further down. I was one of the folks who the Huntsman campaign invited very early on, got invited to his house in Washington, D.C. Fascinating combination of Chinese art and kind of Utah desert art. And he's seemingly a pleasant enough guy, but I put the question to him, look, you served as Obama's ambassador to China. A lot of Republicans are going to hold that against you. What's your argument to that? And his answer was basically, oh, they won't be bothered by that. And it just seemed unbelievably naive on his part and unbelievably out of touch with the mood of the – now, if he had said, I thought Obama could be dangerous on the world stage and I figured I could be more help inside the tent than outside the tent, if he played the card that he had tried to help Obama and Obama was useless and Obama was a disaster for the country, he might have been able to do that. But instead, he was really very comfortable to play the role of the media's favorite Republican. And John Huntsman seemed to be there to take stances in opposition to the rest of the field and then to give these corny jokes in the debate performances. And basically, John Huntsman was the candidate for voters who don't like Republicans. Unfortunately for him and fortunately for the rest of us, there aren't that many voters like that in Republican primaries. He might as well have just openly been saying he was running for a job at MSNBC. And actually, his daughter did end up working as a for MSNBC. What was he trying to, you know, be the Arlen Specter of this cycle? What was his job? You know, and now we realize John Huntsman is just kind of a chaos demon, Greg. I mean, his purpose in this race was apparently to destroy everyone else, including the ultimate nominee, Mitt Romney. So Huntsman really deserves to be have rotten fruit thrown at him everywhere he goes these days, because he managed to, you know, like trash everybody else in it while building no real significant base of support for himself. What did he do? What was his stance? What was his argument? He really added nothing other than to tear down his skills of opposition research. And I guess the only thing we can conclude is that John Huntsman should just go away and leave the Republican Party and go embrace Charlie Crist and the rest of the gang, because you look at this and you kind of wonder, why is this guy in politics? He just seems to hate everybody. Am I wrong, Greg? Am I being too harsh on this guy?
No, I don't think so at all. The fact that he is responsible for all of these, one of these would have been bad enough sully the reputation, but to know that he's responsible for the whole litany of it is just disgusting.
Yeah, so I do understand he probably will get the opposition research contract for the Hillary campaign in 2016. And our future governor, Greg, will probably end up being the finance chair in about a year from now.
Well, let's hope that that doesn't happen, because who knows what could happen tonight. It's an uphill climb, certainly. We'll discuss it all tomorrow when the votes are tabulated. But as of now, if you haven't voted yet, get out there. We're guessing that most of you who are listening to this are of like minds, so we encourage you to get out there and make your voice be heard, and hopefully we'll see the results we want to see tonight. So,
and if you disagree with us, be sure to vote tomorrow.
Absolutely, yeah. Democrats vote on Wednesday in both states. So, Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.